Hello and welcome to another episode of the Breachside Broadcast, home of the finest voxcasting either side of the breach. On today's episode, we pick up the story of Lord Justin Cooper. He has fully recovered from his run-in with the Slate Ridge Mauler, and his newly augmented body has given him superhuman abilities as a hunter. Now, Lord Cooper is seeking more dangerous game to test his mettle. I hope you enjoy the conclusion of Cry Havoc, right after this word from our sponsor. This episode of the Breachside Broadcast is brought to you by Mr. Vincenzo Campagnolo. Mr. Campagnolo specializes in custom-made prostheses and bespoke firearms for the most discerning clients on either side of the breach. Whether you're looking for an artificial leg or a high-caliber firearm, Mr. Campagnolo will deliver something truly special.
Over the next 6 months, Cooper travelled through Africa and India with a steadily growing contingent of subordinates and attendants, hunting incessantly. It was a test of before and after, to hunt something familiar and gauge what he once was against what he had become. He bagged lions, elephants, buffalo, leopards and tigers with terrifying ease and rapidity, marching all day through baking equatorial heat or dense jungle without pause, regularly leaving his trackers behind. Only Artemis and Eula could match his stamina. He took down game daily, and with impunity. Whether bullseyeing a buffalo at 1,000 yards, or killing a pouncing tiger at point-blank range, he brought them all down. And it was all so easy, and strangely unfulfilling. The legend of his recovery and ferocious hunting appetite was already spreading, and he had received telegrams of astonishment and congratulation from the colleagues in the Explorer Society. But the praise felt empty and unearned. He felt unchallenged. Brooding, he returned to Malifaux and hunted Slate Ridge Maulers, wondering whether pitting himself against the beast that had almost done him in would rekindle that spark of peril and adventure. He tracked and killed 4, each time allowing it to catch his scent and charge. Frustrated that his incredible new body had apparently robbed him of the thrill of the hunt, he deliberately withheld his shot on the final mauler attack in a moment of madness, instead sidestepping the massive creature's lunge and ripping the blade of his new rifle along its spine from neck to rump. The beast flopped open like a well-read book, quite dead. His men gathered around, exultant at his bravery and method of dispatch. But Cooper himself was disconsolate. Men were cunning but weak. The beasts lacked guile. He needed more dangerous game. His trackers and agents were closing in on their new target, and Cooper had spent the last few days quickly putting together supplies for an expedition into the wildlands. He was eager for this test, and understood that success here would flush out an even greater prize, bringing him both triumph and revenge in one stroke. It was with great impatience that he answered a last-minute request from Campagnolo. Services paid for or otherwise, he owed a certain debt to the man that had given him back his life, and so he travelled back to Ashford Manor, and to the second library. "My good fellow," he started immediately upon arrival, "I am truly grateful for all that you've done, but you must understand that this visit interrupts vital preparations for what may prove to be my finest hour. I haven't the time." There was a metal figure standing in the middle of the room, blank-faced and motionless, yet strangely familiar. Campagnolo stood beside it, closing an access panel with his nimble fingers. The final incarnations of your new limbs are unsurpassed, he said. Some of the finest work I have ever done, as a matter of fact. Even the earlier models were of intrinsic value, though eventually rendered comparatively obsolete. It seemed a shame to waste them. Cooper stepped closer to review this automaton. It was of similar dimensions to his own, and indeed he recognized its limbs to be his own, or at least earlier versions of them.
I called him Model 9, as you are now fitted with the 10th incarnation of my designs. It seemed appropriate.
Something that sounded like clockwork started up deep in the chest of the mechanism, and it came to life, stepping forward with a grace that reminded Cooper of the dancers at the Star Theater.
With you on safari, I found myself with time on my hands and an abundance of parts. I thought he may prove a useful companion for you. Inspired by some of my previous creations, he does not speak, but nor does he sleep or waver in his allegiance. Qualities that might benefit a man of your confrontational nature.
The artisan flashed his momentary grin once again.
Indeed he will, Cooper noted. Handsome work, my good man. I am once again in your debt.
You have played amply for my services, Campagnolo said with a bow. And I have grown in skill and stature accordingly. We have both benefited.
Fitzroyce and the Vatagi were waiting for him when he stepped outside. The Russians frowned at his sleek new metal shadow, but Fitzroyce's expression was triumphant.
Good news, my lord. They found her.
The stream was deliciously cool. Miranda drank her fill, and now lounged on the soft moss of the bank, trailing bare toes in the water, and letting it drain away the excess heat of the afternoon. The weirdwoods of the forest were outnumbered by the bronze crowns now, having spread their brassy canopies in dark, fruity-smelling sap in profusion following the return of the Autumn Queen. The breeze still carried the scents of jasmine and honeysuckle, and the musky odors of witch head, mushrooms, and horse moss could still be found closer to the ground. Dandelion seed spiraled lazily through the shaft of golden light over her head, and the tinkling water and sighing canopy conspired to steal the afternoon from her with their siren song of indolence. Truth be told, this was a welcome relief. Marcus was agitated at the resurgence of the hunter, Cooper. Her mate had become almost unbearable in recent weeks, pacing his den with a restlessness that was as infectious as it was unwanted. It was said that the Explorer Society alumnus had returned in recent months from what many presumed was the grave. Regenerated and reinvigorated somehow, and was butchering animals with a greater fervor than ever before. It had all come about shortly after Cooper's arrival, under the thin pretense of an organization dedicated to exploration. He had begun traveling the wildernesses of Malifaux, and bringing with him his bloated entourage of fawning sycophants, baggage handlers, personal chefs, and whatever else a lord required to keep himself comfortably civilized. The intrusion itself could perhaps have been stomached for a while, except that Cooper insisted on shooting every new discovery he made in the apparent name of science, and piling their carcasses on wagons. He burrowed steadily further south like a persistent tick, and soon enough was in Marcus territory, spoiling Marcus lands, eating Marcus food, killing Marcus animals. The insult could not be borne. There would have been a bloody altercation, in which all of Cooper's travelling circus would have been butchered, and the wrath of the newly arrived Explorer Society invoked, had Miranda not suggested a more subtle approach. Another traveller had arrived in Malifaux, an agent from Earthside, looking for a guide. He had a handsome weapon for Cooper, so he presented on the occasion of his birthday. It would be a simple thing to intercept this gift. By the time Cooper realized the sabotage, the beast he was trying to slay would already have eaten him. And it would have worked perfectly, except that now he was back, and worse than ever. In an attempt to stop the man, they had apparently created a monster. Miranda knew that there would now be a direct confrontation between them. The Alphas would duel for the claim of supremacy, and sooner or later Marcus would throw down his foe and the balance of nature would be restored. Of that she had no doubt. Whatever foul agencies Lord Cooper had employed to bring about his resurgence, would prove a poor match for the power and savagery of nature. The breeze changed direction, and her nose twitched. Sweat, soap, expensive cologne, gun oil. She was already moving before the gun report, chatteringly loud against the tranquil ambience of the woodland, and launched herself toward the water, even as the bullet blasted the ground behind her into a geyser of soil. Cooper stomped down from the ridgeline to the water's edge, cradling the massive .950 Nitro Express rifle in both arms while he reviewed the scene. Crackers were already racing down both banks of the river in pursuit of his baying hounds, but they would find no trail. He had seen through the scope how the woman had twisted, even as he squeezed the trigger, stretching and shimmering into something half-snake, half-fish, that plunged into the river and sighed downstream faster than a horse could gallop. So the rumors were true. Marcus Woman was a shape-changer. This would make the game very interesting. The hunt continued. He found a trail 2 days later, emerging from the river some 10 miles downstream and heading south, deeper into the wildlands. The woman had guile, it had to be said. On the third day, her trail overlapped that of a family of deer and abruptly vanished. They would have lost her then, but for Artemis and Ula. His dogs insisted the trail followed the deer, despite an absence of footprints, and it was only then that Cooper's experienced eye picked out a sixth deer trail, where before there had been only 5. The sixth deer followed her kin for a day, and once again they lost her. And once again the bloodhounds proved their worth. A fox trail, barely visible even to the trackers, peeled off from the deer, which turned north. His hounds followed it through dense scrub and forest, across multiple streams. They ranged up and down river until they found where she emerged, swinging back to the south, before finally reverting to her more recognizable human prints. Cooper caught up with her under the light of a near-full moon, sheltering amongst the broken stones at the base of an escarpment. Before he had the chance to take his shot, that fool poultice charged in with a net and found himself facing not a slender woman, but a towering razor-spine rattler. Miranda escaped, and they gave poultice a quick burial before pressing on at dawn. 1 week became 2, became 3. They lost their trail again a good way south, and for days they rode back and forth without luck. Even Artemis and Ula seemed puzzled. The trail just stopped with a deep imprint in the earth, as though their quarry had taken a leap into the air. The air. Cooper ordered the beaters and trackers out, ranging in all directions for miles and miles. It seemed likely that Miranda had taken the form of a bird, but it was also likely that her shape-shifting had a cost. Her periods as deer, foxes, boars, and the like had been growing shorter, and her human prints more prevalent. He doubted she could hold the form of a bird for long, perhaps half a day at most. They almost didn't find her trail. Trackers had gone over the area twice without luck, and Cooper only continued to move southwest because that had seemed to be her prevailing direction at the time. He was on the verge of calling the hunt off after 4 days without sign, when Artemis abruptly began snuffling and growling. Ula quickly followed suit, and both dogs began to move north with increasing certainty. By mid-afternoon, they were racing through the undergrowth and what appeared to be the tracks of a gecko or some other tiny lizard, until they found a bare human footprint beneath a bush, and the hunt was on once more. Cooper realized that he felt truly alive for the first time since his accident. Here was a genuine challenge, an amalgam of human cunning and bestial savagery, the likes of which he could never have hoped to master as an ordinary man. Now, thanks to the machinations of the artisan, and his own stubborn refusal to accept defeat, he had the endurance and the reflexes to meet this challenge head on. This was no elephant or tiger, no dumb brute placidly awaiting the bullet that would transform it into a wall trophy. This was a dangerous, resourceful foe, and perhaps the first true equal he had faced since his recovery. Cooper was filled with enthusiasm and good cheer, to such extent that his entourage quickly forgot about the unfortunate idiocy of poor poultice, and strained forward as one for the kill, as eager at the leash as his faithful hounds. Victory was close. They could smell it. Miranda was nearing exhaustion. The hunter had pursued her doggedly for almost 4 weeks. She had tried everything she could think of to lose him, even taken to the air as a bird and put miles between them. But she could not hold any form other than her own indefinitely, and when forced to return to the earth, somehow he found her again. The wildlands were full of his beaters and trackers, all moving in concentric circles around the central hunting party as they flushed her from cover again and again. She had run south and west until the terrain became unfamiliar and the woods turned hot and swampy. Down here, the weirdwood was still king, and every bough hung low from the weight of marsh vines and exotic climbing plants whose flowers studded the grey trunks with brilliant splashes of red and blue. It had a beauty of its own, a more riotous, tumultuous quality than the neighbouring woods of the Autumn Queen, but also more primal. She had sensed things down here that were dangerous even to her, dark beasts and fae that cared nothing for her skills, and would harm her if they could. But perhaps in that danger lay her salvation. She understood now that she would not be able to escape Lord Cooper by subterfuge alone. He was too experienced a huntsman, and his endurance was inhuman. He would run her down until he had her in a corner from which there was no escape. There was still a chance, however. If he and his party were waylaid by something more immediate, a distraction, giving her the breathing room she so desperately needed to find a way back north to Marcus. And she had an idea how that could be arranged. Fitzroyce was grinning under his walrus moustache as he trotted up, his face smeared with dirt. "Our scouts report she's gone to ground in a gully up ahead, my lord," he said. "It narrows to a dozen feet or so near the southern end, and is choked with vines and vegetation." It was apparent from his pleasure that he thought they had her trapped, but Cooper was less certain. He had come to know Miranda's mind intimately over the last 4 weeks of forest terrain, and the one thing she definitely wasn't was short-sighted enough to back herself into a dead end. "Indeed," he mused, scratching his chin with steel fingertips. "Fan the men out in the ridges on both sides. We'll take the gully from the north. If she tries to break out to the south, she'll have to run the gauntlet of snipers on the ridges." "Very good, sir." Cooper still harbored a doubt, and paused his subordinate with a look. "Oh, and Fitzroyce, keep the dogs well back from the gully. I don't trust this devious woman, and I'll suffer no harm to them." "As you say, my lord." His doubt grew to an apprehension as they descended into the shadowy gully. Even with a dozen rifles up on the ridge on both sides, and the presence of his Vitagi, Fitzroyce, and the others at his back, Gruber's instincts told him there was an ambush up ahead. The ground down here was stony from the river, that had long since dried up, and his attention flittered between the traces of movement among the smooth pebbles and soil, and the green rat's nest of vegetation up ahead. Miranda was close. He could almost smell her. Then that's what made him uncomfortable. She should have been running. The dogs were nervous. You could hear them baying and growling back up at the camp. They too sensed something was amiss, had perhaps caught a strange scent in the air. Cooper stopped, and the man at his back followed suit. "Something's wrong," he whispered to Fitzroyce, his eyes sliding over the ground ahead of them, searching for the source of his raised hackles. "We shouldn't have come down here." It was true enough. The walls of the gully were steep and crumbling. There was no way out other than the shallow mouth to the north. They had unintentionally corralled themselves. "We're backing up. I don't like this terrain." Fitzroyce looked frustrated, but nodded without comment and shouldered his rifle. And just then the gully was filled with a loud, ululating cry. It sounded strange and exotic, like the call of some immense alien bird, and it echoed back and forth repeatedly, making a terrific din. "What is that?" exclaimed Fitzroyce, wincing. "Miranda," Cooper said. Cooper hunkered low as the pebbles around him began to shiver from rapidly approaching tremors, audible even over the cacophony of alien howling. "A distress call?" Fitzroyce asked. Cooper shook his head, anger at his own idiocy for walking into an ambush. "A dinner bell." The mass of vegetation erupted at the southern end of the gully, and a titanic, nightmarish shape emerged, the source of the thunderous footfalls. Cooper had travelled to every continent on Earth, and had hunted animals on each one. He was no stranger to the ferocity of nature and all its guises, and felt himself more or less inured to the terrible splendour of an apex predator in full attack. He'd never seen anything like this, however. A lizard, a monstrous lizard 20 feet or more in height, trailing vines that snagged and tore against the profusion of spikes that ran the length of its spine. It walked on its hind legs, which were massive, and as it strode forward, Cooper's keen hunter's eye noted how the long armored tail counterbalanced the head. And what a head! The size of a small wagon, and equipped with a set of jaws so large you would have laughed with derision at the improbability, with an out snapping furiously on the air before his very eyes. The creature surged into the gully, suddenly seeming all the smaller for being filled with its bulk, shaking that huge head from side to side as it tried to locate the source of the howling. Cooper could hear the exclamations of astonishment and fear from his own men, and in truth was himself quite daunted at the prospect of tackling this horror. Lions and tigers were all very well, but this thing was more than twice the body mass of the largest bull elephant he'd ever faced, and 100 times more ferocious. The ululating cut off abruptly as it started, and Cooper caught a glimpse of a brilliant bird-like creature, just as it shrank to a tiny brown mouse, which shot away between the splayed feet of the new arrival. The trap was sprung, and now she made good her escape.
"Touché, madam," Cooper muttered.
The beast snapped its jaws shut and surveyed the gully, noticing for the first time the half-dozen small, bite-sized figures crouching a distance away. Its tiny eyes rolled with fury. Clearly this creature was territorial, and Miranda's piercing call had been a clear threat to its sovereignty. It was here to defend its lair and kill any intruders, namely Cooper and his hunting party. The huge jaws yawned open, but instead of a roar, out boiled a nest of swarming tentacles that lashed and whipped at the air and sprayed warm froth across the stony ground. Whatever this creature was, it did not conform to any of the laws of nature. Cooper found himself frozen with indecision. On the one hand, Miranda had played her ace card brilliantly and reeled them in like prize carp. She had proven herself a more than worthy quarry, which only made him ache all the more to resume the chase and run her to ground again. On the other, here was a magnificent specimen that neither he nor anyone at the Explorer Society had ever laid eyes on before. It was the sort of encounter that one is perhaps once in a lifetime, and he knew that he couldn't let the opportunity pass. The main entrance hall at Ashford Manor would need to be knocked down and extended to accommodate this brute's skull, but it would be worth the extra expense. As though the two had reached the same accord, the monster surged forward, stalking on long hind legs that ate up the distance between them in seconds. Cooper caught sight of its absurdly short forelegs, which seemed to serve no practical purpose at all. But the fledgling naturalist in him had no more time for speculation, as the beast was already upon him. He put his first round into its skull, in the crease around what would have been a cheekbone on a man, and was astonished to see the high-powered bullet cut a deep trench in the lizard's thick flesh, but otherwise ricochet ineffectually off their bone. His next two shots were aimed at the chest, and punched in more satisfactorily, but seemed not to trouble it. His snipers on the ridge had already opened up, but they were armed with smaller rifles. Beastings against the flanks of such a monster. Fitzroyce gave the beast one barrel of his .600 nitro rifle to the sternum, and while it made a sizable impact, it otherwise did nothing to slow the charge. It did, however, distract the target of that charge away from Cooper. The monster steamed past him like a derailed locomotive, going for the astonished Fitzroyce. And it would have had him. Had one of his fearless Fatagi not launched a spear that struck the creature's neck, checking the assault. Evidently of limited tactical capacity, the beast turned to meet this new attack. Even as Vitagi was drawing another weapon, a heavy cleaver, the monster's lashing tentacles snapped around him and slurped him into the air with a disturbing man-eating a bowl of hot noodles action. The massive jaws slammed shut, two furry boots tumbled to the ground, one convulsive swallowing action later, and the man was gone. "Fiend!" Fitzroyce exclaimed, blasting his other barrel into the monster. The impacts were beginning to register. Cooper knew the powerful slugs were being driven through the protective lattice of flesh and muscle in his chest wall, and a dark sluggish blood had begun to ooze and spatter from the accumulating wounds, but the beast was far from down. It went for him again, but was distracted by a whirl of glistening metal. Model 9 cartwheeled past in a flash of blades that left parallel razor slashes along its muzzle. The beast was far quicker than any lizard had a right to be. Its movements were more characteristic of a bird than a reptile, and when globules of its blood struck his face as the immense tail whipped around, he found it was hot. His remaining Vitagi attacked its flank, while the infuriating monster continued to chase Model 9, but the stabbing spears were cut short when that huge tail swatted them into the gully wall. Cooper went to one knee and reloaded, taking stock. The monster's hide was pockmarked with bullet holes now, though he knew that the vast majority had barely penetrated the first layer of that spiny skin. Cooper himself had pumped half a dozen .950 cartridges into its chest, and he could see the breathing was becoming labored. The thick lather between the lashing tentacles was turning pink. And, for all its tremendous size, this prize was a biped. It had greater mobility, but with that came instability. "Model 9," he roared, raising the custom rifle to his shoulder again. "Turn it to face me." Without apparent effort or concern, the dancing, flashing machine abruptly reversed course, and the beast followed, snapping with frustration at its elusive prey. As it turned, Cooper fired. The bullet, traveling at some 2,500 feet per second, struck the creature's bony ankle with a tremendous crack that echoed around the gully. The beast roared in pain, stumbled and tried to take a step on the wounded joint, and pitched forward, full length, with a sound like a collapsing building. Cooper raced forward, planting his clawed foot on the down-breathed muzzle, and fired again at point-blank range, hitting it square in the center of its skull. The bony plate shattered, and the massive slug tore through its tiny brain, turning it to pulp. One last violent lash of the tail, and the thing was dead. The men were already scrambling down from the gully walls, and he could hear shouts going up behind him for tanners and butchers. They knew as well as Cooper the prestige such a mighty skull would bring. They crowded around, sharpening their long flensing knives and setting down pails to collect the meat and gore. "Where's your joy, sir?" one said. "A tremendous shot," congratulated another. "Get my man out of there," he snapped by way of response. "He was a Vitagi huntsman, and he'll have a huntsman's burial." He left them to their work, marched back up the incline to the makeshift camp where his dogs anxiously waited his arrival. He gathered them up in his arms, relishing their frantic licks as they simultaneously welcomed him back and cleaned his face of gore. "What a beast that chap was, hey?" he said, ruffling their thick fur. "No doubt you two would have had him, though, hey? Straight from the throat, the pair of you, eh?" They yowled their agreement, whipping his legs with their excited tails. "Excuse me, sir," Fitzroyce interrupted him. Cooper straightened up to find Fitzroyce carrying what could only have been a gigantic egg, partially wrapped in canvas. "Sorry to disturb," he said. "Only a couple of the boys found these on the other side of the gully. Some sort of nest, by the looks of things." Sure enough, a handful of men were coming up the slope behind him, each one struggling with a heavy egg. "Thought you might fancy an omelette," Fitzroyce chuckled. Then his eyes widened. "I'll tell you what, though. Imagine one of those buggers hatched, eh? What a sight that would be. You could keep it as a pet." He laughed riotously until he saw Cooper's expression, and his smile fell off. "Oh, I say," he said. The warmth of the campfire eased the ache in Miranda's bones, and the familiar scent of home eased her spirit. She crouched in the darkness, watching the flames dance, content to acknowledge their beauty without understanding the meaning of the shapes. After the pursuit she had endured, such contemplation was a luxury. The past weeks had taken their toll. She was drawn and weakened, lashed by branches in her constant flight. Her feet were cut, her nails cracked. Had the ambush with the Fae not worked, she could not have resisted the pursuit much longer. As it was, she did not even know how effective it had been. There was a chance that Cooper was already dead, though in her heart she doubted it. A figure came out of the darkness behind her. She recognized his movements and his scent long before he stepped into her field of view. Marcus looked down at his mate. He touched a scratch on her temple with infinite tenderness, rubbed her blood between thumb and forefinger. His face was a gathering storm.
That's it for another episode of the Breachside Broadcast. Join us next time for more Tales of Malifaux.